Hey, this is Mike. Welcome back to Running for Beginners podcast, the show designed to help you build a strong foundation in running, one step at a time. Today's episode is for runners who've mastered the basics and are starting to look a little further down the trail, literally. Today, I'm joined by Laura Sapinar, founder of OwnYourEndurance.com, an ultra running coach and accomplished endurance athlete whose experience spans everything from the Boston Marathon and multiple New York City and Marine Corps marathons to 50Ks, 50-milers, 100Ks, and multiple 100-mile trail races, including the Javelina in Oregon Cascades. Laura's a USCA certified ultra running coach, a level 1 precision nutrition coach, and a Training Peaks level 1 certified. As a precision nutrition certified coach, she supports athletes not just in training and racing, but in building the nutrition, habits, and lifestyle foundations that make endurance sustainable physically, mentally, and long-term. Her work helps runners show up stronger for their sport and for life. Today, we're talking about trail ultra coaching, nutrition, common mistakes runners make when stepping up in distance, and what it really means to own your endurance. Whether you're curious about ultras or just want to train smarter and more sustainably, this episode is packed with insight that you can apply right now. So let's get into it. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for taking time sitting down. I really appreciate this. I tell all the guests that either before or live that I feel very blessed to be able to talk to experts and professionals in the field and that they take time out of their day to sit down with me so we can pass on this information to relatively new beginners at this point. I mean, I'm in the second year of the podcast, so we're kind of tracking with people's experiences based on that. So you're not necessarily a newbie if you're listening to these episodes. You've kind of worked your way up, but it's still nice to pass this information along. So I really appreciate the people that sit down with me. So thank you very much.
No, absolutely. Well, no, I'm not a newbie, but I was a newbie at some point.
New to the first step,
new to the first 5K and all the way up, just like you.
Yeah, everyone's a beginner once. And I think there's always going to be more beginners than there are longer people. So these topics should stay evergreen and on the ether. So we should look back at these in 10 years and it'll still, all the answers and all the information should still be valid. So
absolutely.
That's my hope. All right. So let's get into this here. I got some questions for you. The first one is, it's about your certification. So you're a USCA certified ultra coach and a level 1 precision nutrition coach and a Training Peaks level 1 certified coach. So how do all these certifications shape that the way you coach athletes differently than like the one size fits all training plan that someone might pull up on Strava or Garmin or whatever, you know?
Thanks for the question. And the certifications gave me the science. They gave me the evidence-based research. They gave me everything from physiology to psychology to the training platforms, how it all kind of comes together and how it applies to ultra running. Mm-hmm. And in your question, you said one size fits all. What really resonated for me at the end of it all is everyone is different, as you know. Everyone's unique. There's no one plan for everyone because everybody has their own unique experiences, their own unique training plan, history, background, goals. And it's important that I, as a coach, meet them where they are. What I bring, I believe, based on my background, is my own life experiences. So anybody can get a certification. There are thousands of trainers out there. There's thousands of strength trainers, right? I mean, we all can go in, pay $500, take the test, and bam, all of a sudden, we're a coach. Well, I've got 30 years of professional coaching experience and leadership. I've got 10 years of coaching experience in youth sports, but really, what I feel I bring value to is the messy middle. It's having two kids, having a very intense professional background, being able to figure out how to fit it all in with the schedules. And oh, by the way, my husband wants to do some exercise too.
Yeah.
We train. So you got to figure out how do I help athletes figure that out and without blowing up their schedule and saying to them, hey, it's possible and I can help you with some creative structure to create a plan to help you achieve that goal in the end. So I think the personal experiences for me really drive it all home. and coaches have to adapt to the lifestyle of that individual. I didn't mention the nutrition coaching. Originally, I thought, I just want to get the nutrition coaching so I can really understand it a little bit better. And as I got into it, I'm like, oh, this is not just going to complement the runners and help me on game day and training day. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. It's every day. How do you optimize your health and have the energy that you need every day as you're training to include recovery, to include sleep? Sleep is the best recovery of them all. To how do you adapt to stress? So it's more of a holistic approach as a coach when you pull together all the certifications.
Okay. Yeah, that's really cool. So you've raced, I mean, I know a little bit about your background. I mean, you've raced everything from the Boston Marathon to multiple New York City marathons, which I signed up for the drawing. So I don't know if I'll get in.
All right. It's the best marathon.
Well, let's see. And then the Marine Corps Marathon as well as 100-mile races. So what's the biggest adjustment going from like road races to ultras? You know, what's the biggest thing you've had to adjust when you're changing from road to trail?
It's funny. I had just did a debrief with one of my athletes who just finished a 50-miler. And we were talking about kind of our transition from marathon running to ultra, what we had to let go of, you know, all the mistakes that we've made. And the biggest thing, the first thing was letting go of pace and letting go of the belief that walking was okay. Or, you know, walking for me, I had this mindset that walking was failure. Right. So if I ever had to slow down, even at an, it was so ridiculous, even at an aid station when I was doing these marathons, I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to get through the aid station without walking? Because if I walk, it meant that I failed. Right. So it was this belief when I transitioned and did my first 50K, my first 50 miler trail race. My coach at the time had said, hey, Laura, and this it was a JFK 50. Fun fact, it's in Boonesboro, Maryland. It's the oldest marathon in the country. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not. Mm-hmm. It was born in 1963. President Kennedy at the time had said, hey, we need a physical fitness, you know, test or something out there to really push physical fitness. And the JFK 50 was born, and it's the oldest event of its era. In fact, when I was reading the Ultra Marathon magazine over the weekend, there was over 1,000 runners who now run that race. I mean, that's huge. And it's a trail race. So anyway, back to the story. So it was 4 or 5 weeks prior to the race. And he said, hey, I want you to do a 6-hour trail run. And I had been running in runnable trails at the time. And he's like, it has to be similar terrain. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to the Appalachian Trails right in, you know, in the mountains. It's 2 hours away. I've got to go there anyway for the race. The first third of the JFK 50 is, quote unquote, technical. I didn't know what I was getting myself into at the time. So I get up there. Some guy on Facebook said, hey, take the white trail out. Just go out. And then you could take an Uber back to your car. I'm like, okay, that sounds good to me. So I start on the trail. There's these sharp rocks. There's big rocks. There's roots. There's tree trunks. My brain all of a sudden starts spiraling. I'm tripping over my feet. I couldn't even, this is serious. Blood, knees. Oh boy. I'm like, whoa, am I on the right trail? Am I supposed to be doing, what is happening here? Right. So I had to settle my mind down. This is true. And I'm like, I'm just going to go out 3 hours. I'm going to come back to my car and I'm going to see what happens. I come back and my expectations was I'm going to do 6 hours. I'm going to do almost 30 miles, 12 minute miles, all this fun stuff. I come back. It wasn't even 20 miles. It was 16 minute miles. And it was 3,000 feet of elevation. Wow. And it humbled me fast. I was so disappointed. I was so upset. I'm sitting in my car. I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? But punchline here is it was probably the biggest lesson or the best lesson I ever got in trail running, back to letting go of pace. Right. Hiking was essential, right?
Okay. Sure.
I had to walk. It protected me. It kept me safe. It was what I had to do. And it was the exact specific training that I needed for race day. So again, I had to let go very quickly. And as you know, you've done an ultra race. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you seen the elites out? Even the elites have to hike. And I just didn't get it. And now I'm right. Like, okay, now I'm comfortable. And I even have power walking or power hiking in my athletes' training.
Okay. I was going to follow up with something like that. So you actually tell them what to expect if they're transitioning. They need to be aware of what you ran into personally.
Yeah. Because otherwise I would have been like, what am I doing? It's a big mindset. I mean, it really is a big mindset change. If you haven't done it before and you haven't been on trails, people have come to me and said, oh my gosh, I'm scared. And I don't mean to scare everyone, right?
Right.
But then it made me come back like, wow, at least now I know what I'm getting into when I get back out 4 weeks from now to attack that trail and attack that race. So it was a great experience. A big lesson learned, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, pace is a big thing you're going to have to let go of for sure.
Yeah.
So for the training part of it, when runners are coming from like a marathon background, what's the biggest training mistakes that you see they make when they're preparing for a trail ultra?
I think it goes to pace again.
Really?
Pace in terms of, well, it's two things.
You don't think like the food or nutrition or that kind, not nutrition, but like the, I found the biggest difference is that on the trail, I had to eat a lot, you know, like I had to eat while I was running. And it wasn't like just a bunch of gels like I do on a marathon, you know, it was like granola or something solid or peanut butter, little peanut butter chunks as peanut butter pretzel things. I needed different fuel sources. And that was a big difference for my trail run as compared to road stuff, you know?
Yeah, I thought we might talk about that later. But yeah, I can definitely go down that path with you. That was a huge shift. In fact, if I only knew now what I knew then when I did marathons, it was very reactive. We didn't have the education we have now around carb and fueling and mm-hmm. hydration and nutrition. So yes, it's definitely about training, carbs and hydration in the training, not just on the training run.
Right.
And the biggest difference there is I had to shift from calories to carbs per hour. When I first jumped into ultras, it was like, oh, Laura, 200 to 250 calories per hour could be fine. And you could say, oh, that's great. But then if I grab a protein bar that has 200 to 300 calories and 20 grams of protein and 12 grams of carb, that's not going to help me in the way that we need to, because we have to be building those glycogen stores, which are those simple carbs, like the applesauce, like the gels, like you said. And back to your point, with marathons, you can get away with gels. In ultras, I balance real food with gels, Cliff Blocks, all different types of energy sources that are primarily carbohydrates. And I think Cassie talked about it last time on your recent podcast. Mm-hmm. If you haven't trained that way, I mean, ultimately you want to get up to 60 to 90 grams of carbs per hour. Hmm. But I really recommend that folks start with maybe 30 and test it. But the sweet spot is 60 grams per hour. My coach just upped me to 70 to 80. Hmm. And it's working for me, which I was surprised about. But that, yes, that definitely nutrition is a big one. I was going down the path of strength training, Mike, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, just for a second.
I mean, go ahead,
we're
of course.
Talking about pace, but I think athletes underestimate the value of what strength training can bring. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, my coach had us all going to the gym. I mean, to the weight room.
Right.
I didn't know why we were going, but we were going. We were doing the leg lifts. We're doing all these step ups. I'm like, I thought running alone was enough, mm-hmm. but that wasn't the case. I mean, fast forward years ahead, I did not strength train for marathons. And it was only when I had a DNF and a bigger mountainous race that just reinforced to me that running just at that point was diminishing returns, and I had to be intentional about strength training. And that just doesn't go for athletes. It goes for folks like you and me aging. As we age, we're losing muscle mass, and it's so important that we're strength training. Mm-hmm. So I was very intentional about heavy weights and doing close to failure in that regimen. So I do things like the deadlifts or single, you know, RDLs mm-hmm. or step ups or what have you. But with that regimen, 4, 5, 6 months, 2 times a week, that helped me endure and build that strength that I did not have before. And it was noticeable in my body composition. I mean, my weight pretty much stayed the same, but my legs got really strong.
Right.
And think about the culture that we're in. If you go to Strava right now, what is everybody rewarding everybody for?
I don't know. I'm not in that cult.
Right. And I'm not either. I mean, I'm in there, but any kudos that I get, I don't have a lot of friends, but I'm on it. Everyone's rewarding miles. They're rewarding distance.
Gotcha.
They're rewarding how far did you go? And for those who are listening, social media is like, oh, wow, I did these miles. They're not rewarding or giving us thumbs up for those 5 sets of, you know, deadlifts or that strength workout, because Strava not only calculates your whatever your watch is, the runs, it's also talking about the, you know, Pilates workout that you did or anything is going to show up there. So I think culture changes that, and running alone is not enough. Strength training is very important, and it really helped me build that durability and strength and overall fitness to be more successful in completing my runs.
Hi, everybody. It's your host, Mike Fleming. As runners, we spend a lot of time thinking about strength, building it, testing it, finding it when things get hard. As a dad of 3 grown kids, I know how lucky I am that our toughest moments were things like scraped knees or late night fevers. We never needed the kind of strength that comes from hearing your child is seriously ill. But countless families do, and that's where St. Jude Children's Research Hospital steps in. St. Jude gives parents something no training plan can prepare you for: hope. They take away the financial burden. No family ever receives a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food. So parents can focus on helping their child live, regardless of the duration or the cost of care. They surround families with care, support, and world-class treatment at a time when fear and uncertainty feel overwhelming. As runners, we know what it means to show up for people, to carry someone when the miles get tough. Supporting St. Jude is one of the most meaningful ways we can do that. If you're able, I invite you to join me in helping the families who need that strength today. Donate at http://heroes.stjude.org/runningforbeginners. That's heroes.stjude.org/runningforbeginners. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree totally. I told you before that I work out and then I run. That's my routine. And I've always worked out, and then just started running, like, you know, for 4 years. Well, my buddy just started working out. He never worked out before, and he'd run with me, and he'd always, and he's younger. He's like 46 or something. Like, he's a good 10 years younger than me. And he would run and be like, man, you're running a lot longer, harder, longer races. How do you keep doing it? I'm like, well, I work out, so it doesn't, it's not that bad to me. And 1 year, I think it was my second or third year, when I started focusing on my lower body to improve my races, and I was doing a lot more hamstring and glute exercises, things like that, I noticed that my speeds were picking up. You know, my lung capacity might be the same. I still might be gassed at whatever distance I'm running.
Yeah.
And I might be exhausted, but my legs were stronger and more resilient. You know, and especially when you're running on the road, jumping off curbs or turning and stuff like that, you know, your single leg exercises seem to help me out a lot.
So important. I mean, the other thing it just reminded me is stretching. I mean, static stretching does not really have any evidence of being helpful.
Yeah.
And you always see a lot of folks that are warming up for a 10K or a marathon, you know, doing all these static stretches. And what I have transition my runners to, and myself, that helps us is dynamic stretching. So doing a 5 minute simple, and this is a big difference too in training, if you can take 5 minutes before you run and skip 100 yards and skip backwards, do walking lunges, walk backwards, single double leg hops, frog leaps, things that propel forward movement before you actually move, and it really gets your heart pumping as well. I really have found that that helps with the warm-up, and it helps for injury prevention as well, especially the hips, because I hear a lot of runners complain about the hips and the knees, and the hips are our foundation. So just another suggestion for anyone listening out there.
Yeah, they're gonna come back from this and have all kinds of like tidbit bites of knowledge
exactly.
They're gonna put together, which is great. This is great. So ultra runners often hear, you know, just run more. Time on feet is that phrase I think that people use, but it's not always the answer. So how do you balance mileage, strength, terrain, and recovery when coaching someone? I know we just talked about the terrain because in your first trail run, you realize the terrain is gonna play a factor in your ultra running career. We just talked about the strength, but if you combine them, the mileage, the strength, the terrain and recovery. So how do you, when coaching someone for those longer trail distances, how do you tell them to balance that?
Well, you said just run more or
well,
not.
Yeah.
Just
like that people hear that, but it's not necessarily the correct thing.
I agree.
You know?
And
yeah.
I believe if you're transitioning from a marathon to a 50K, you probably could do the same training.
Okay.
In terms of not having to run more, when you get up to 50 mile, 100 Ks, 100s, you're probably going to have to do a little bit more.
Okay.
When I heard the question, one thing came to mind for me, and that's structure. So how do I figure out how to pull in the time needed on feet,
right.
like the duration of training? We just talked about strength. How do I pull in the recovery? So with athletes, it's trying to figure out what that structure looks like building into their life, kind of like I talked about earlier. So what I typically ask an athlete to do, even for myself, it's like, okay, Mike, for you, what day must you have off? Like what day is off limits based on your lifestyle, kids, whatever you have going on?
Sure. I don't, but I mean, I'll usually take one day off a week. So it could be a Sunday just because.
Okay. So your day off is Sunday. So typically when you get into endurance and longer distances, those longer runs could be anywhere from 2 hours to six or more back-to-back training weekends. So if I said to you, Mike, okay, so if Sundays are your day off, where are your long runs? Where are you going to do that long run?
Well, I'm different than most people. I can do it any day of the week I want to.
Okay. So then I would say to you, okay, so Sunday is your protected time. If we do Sunday as your protected time, how about we do your long runs on Saturday, which will give you recovery on Sunday? How does that sound?
Yeah.
Right. And then at some point, we're going to build in interval work or maybe hill workout. So more anaerobic or speed workout, depending on your fitness level and depending on where you are in training. So what I want to make sure is that the athlete understands working with them, here are the days off. Here's where we're going to build in your long runs. Here's where we're going to have your endurance runs. And then here's the recovery. You talked about earlier, you do hard days hard, easy days easy, because you have your strength and your runs on the same day. So we want to make sure we built in recovery as well. So it's really important to balance it, because the last thing you want to do is say, okay, you're going to have, you know, a hard run on Tuesdays, and then we're going to do another hard run on Wednesday, and then you're going to have off. You're not going to have enough time to recover. So there's really the balance of structure based on the person's or athlete's life.
Okay.
To pull it all together, if that makes sense. I mean,
it does.
I don't
but
know
let me ask you a follow-up question. So based on their life and their schedule, I understand that. I would assume you have to take into consideration the capabilities of the athlete, as well as can they do more than one long run in a week, or how long is that run going to be? You know what I mean? If they can recover. And the reason I'm going this route in my questioning is because on my normal days, if I'm not training for anything particular, I'll run 6 miles every day. That's my base. If I can do, and it just keeps me easy enough to do whatever I want to do, a half marathon, you know, I could do a half marathon every weekend. I just feel comfortable enough to do it now, as long as I have a certain base number, you know, within my schedule. But I would think that other people can't do that, or they do more than me based on their experience and their physical fitness level and everything else. So I'm just kind of wondering how that plays in the level of the athlete, you know, who you're dealing with, the coaching that you're coaching.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Well, I know you're right. I have an athlete right now that I'm training for a half marathon. Ultimately, her goal at the end of the year is to do a marathon, back to your point. So you've got to figure out what type of training is that athlete doing right now, right? And then to your point, you can be at a certain base, but I don't want her doing a half marathon 4 weeks from now and not getting up or close to that mileage on that long run. And I also want to build in, depending on her goal, like her goal right now, I want to beat my best. I want to still have fun,
right?
But I want to beat my best. So we're going to build in maybe some speed or interval work to build her aerobic capacity and fitness so that her pace improves so that she can go longer, faster, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
So it all depends on the athlete. If you want to do 6 miles a day, that's fine. But I would definitely encourage some type of fitness threshold, depending on what your goal is, mm-hmm. and a longer run once a week so that you have that recovery time.
So I'm the idiot. I get to interview coaches and professionals, but I don't necessarily practice what they preach. I will do intervals. I'll do a training plan, right? I'll do intervals. I'll do threshold runs. I'll do sprints, hill sprints and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'll do them first. And let's say my threshold run says to do this thing for this amount of time. Well, when I'm done, I'll look at my watch at that threshold run. And let's say it showed up at 4 miles.
Okay.
Done. I'm going to run two more. So that
do it two more. Another.
So that's, I do that after the training, like whatever it is, whatever that my Garmin tells me to do or whatever I'm following. If it says, you know, do a threshold, do a hill sprints or something like that, you know, some kind of training, I'll look at the time. I'll look at that and I'll be like, all right, that's probably going to put me around so much mileage. And then if it's not at six or better, then I'll keep trying to run if I can, if I have the energy left.
Well, so you're set on that 6 mile mark versus.
Because it's in my own mind for me anyway.
Yeah, no.
When it's like falling off a bike or whatever it is, I know I can ride the bike again, but it's never going to be as easy. So like when I get off of that baseline, I'm like, oh my God, a 5K is going to kick my ass this week because I haven't been running it, you know? But if I run six constantly, I can do a 5K any day of the week. I can do a 10K any day of the week, and I can do a half marathon every weekend. And so it's kind of like the sweet spot for me. But if I don't get a chance to do those, I always get my recovery. But if I don't get a chance to keep that mileage at that distance, that's my like baseline. I find that I am constantly working up to something, hitting it, but then going backwards and then having to work up to it again and then come backwards again. And I'd rather just work up to it and then stay there. It's just my mindset, but I don't know if it's right or not.
Well, the question that I have back to you is, well, how does your body feel? And if your mindset is you want to build your aerobic capacity so you can get faster, there's no reason why you can't do 6 miles because your mind is set on mileage right now.
Sure.
When we transition to ultra, we try and adapt to duration and relinquish the miles. But there's no reason why you can't do 6 miles. You could do how does this sound? You do a 10 or 15 minute walkout, warm up. Mm-hmm. And then you run 30 minutes fast, right? Mm-hmm. Moderate to fast pace where, you know, it's no longer conversational. You can maybe say a few things. And then you do a 15-minute cool down. And guess what? You accomplish both things. You accomplish a warm up. You got that fast race in to build your aerobic capacity, get that heart breathing. And then you have your cool down. And guess what? You win because you get your 6 miles in.
Sure.
And you get both in at the same time.
Yeah.
Maybe. Right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I thought about, too, and you tell me, when new folks that come from marathon to ultra or even folks coming in, and I did it myself, we're all training at the same pace. We're all like, training at the same pace all the time. And what we have to teach folks is, or I had to teach myself, is 80-20 rule. The aerobic fitness happens in the slower conversational paces. Right. Give myself time to recover, right? And then are you familiar with the RPE scale, rate of perceived exertion, and how that works?
No, no, I'm
so
not.
It's a scale of 1 to 10. 1, 2, 3 is kind of easy conversational, and that's where we do our long runs. And in fact, the majority of our training, 80%, really we like our athletes to be there. Mm-hmm. And then it goes all the way up to 10, where you're sprinting, right? Okay. And those are these anaerobic, really high intense. And then you've got tempo and what we call, and I don't want to get too technical for the folks that are listening on the phone because I know it's for beginners, but those are those interval or those speed workouts that are going to build that, you know, aerobic engine so you can go faster for a longer period of time. So ultimately you're building fitness, you're building the durability, and the volume, but you're also building your aerobic capacity. So it's teaching runners, and I had to figure it out myself, that it's okay to run slow.
Sure.
And that's where, right? And then you have that time and energy for a quality workout session. Like, how quality is your workout session if you're always going the same pace? You don't know.
Right.
So it's a lot. There's a lot.
It's a juggling act.
It's a juggling act. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. It's your host, Mike Fleming. I record and edit Running for Beginners with Riverside. Riverside is the forerunner of video recording software for all your creator needs. It is loaded with powerful manual editing tools, AI tools in editing, top-notch tech support that actually respond, and they can even host your podcast and have the RSS feeds sent to the major platforms like Apple and Spotify. And they most recently added a free website for members. So if you host your podcast on Riverside, you now get a website where your listeners can watch, listen, subscribe, and get automatically notified about new episodes. You'll have your own URL, and you can share anywhere to help build your audience and keep your listeners coming back for more. Every episode is always up to date and easy for your listeners to find and share. No complex setup or maintenance needed. And the best part? Hosting on Riverside, including your podcast website, comes free with your plan. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for the best editing and recording software site today. Use this link to start your plan at Riverside. It's riverside.sjv.io/2AOELM. Okay. So when we get to the nutrition now, so as you're, you know, as a precision nutrition coach, and you're obviously an experienced ultra runner. So how does fueling for a 5K or a 100 mile or different from fueling for a marathon? I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but what do you think runners should start practicing before race day? I know for me, it was just about eating, like the physical act of eating while I'm running or jogging or whatever. That was,
yeah.
That was something I had to make sure that I wasn't throwing something down my throat that I was going to yak up later, you know? So that was my personal thing. But is there anything that you try to warn people on when they're going to these longer races, what they got to worry about in nutrition?
Yeah, I think in addition to the logistics, right, what you're comfortable with, like some people don't like to chew. Some people, and it's difficult, or they know, for me, if I'm going to chew, it's when I'm going up a hill. It's like, I know that I can eat something tangible, or, you know, a banana or half that peanut butter and jelly sandwich when I'm going up a hill, because I'm hiking anyway. And then during those flat and steadies is where I go to my gels or something that's easier to manage while I'm running. The biggest change, Mike, is the duration. So if we think about, this is where the physiology and the science comes into play. So the blood is competing with two different things. It's trying to support our muscles, right? Mm-hmm. And fitness as we go longer, but it also has to fuel our digestive tract. Mm. And if we fail over a long period of time to build the skill of eating and nutrition, then that's where it's all going to go haywire. Because there will, and I don't know what happened in your 40, but at some point, there's going to be a time, if we don't train our gut, that blood is all going to go to help our muscles. And that's where you're going to slow down, the fatigue sets in, we start to maybe have GI distress, maybe we get nauseous, we're like, I don't want it, I can't eat right now. So back to the question is, when you're in training, and Cassie talked about this last week in your, you know, in your most recent podcast, anything, I say 90 minutes, but could be over an hour in training, I suggest that you start fueling your carb and hydration together. And then on those long runs, that's where you're testing. Hey, what works for me is not going to work for you, Mike. And one tip I would give you is, don't try too many things on the same day. In fact, if you're going to change something up, try one thing, because you're not going to know
what it impacted.
It was. And you're going to be like, wait, was it the scratch fuel, or was it the Morton gels, or was it the Cliff Blocks, or was it precision hydration and fuel? And then the other thing that comes into play that I hear from my athletes, well, that's all easy, Laura, but the nutrition and hydration, it's really expensive.
Mm.
Tip that I would give everyone, where I went originally, is feed gut feed.com, F-E-E-D.com. Mm-hmm. You can go there and buy individual packets. So if you want to try energy blocks or any, you know, any type of gel, you can pick your kind of menu and you'll get a package and you can try different things to see what works for you. And it's taken me 7 years to figure out
what you like,
what the magic recipe is. And what I would also recommend is real food and gels. So you got the energy blocks, the gels. Can you combine that in your hourly recipe of 60, again, directionally, carbs an hour? What does that look like? And then not forgetting. And a way not to forget is to set your watch a timer. And I typically try and encourage my athletes, set your Garmin. It'll give you a watch. It can go off every 20 minutes. It'll remind you to ding, ding, eat. Mm-hmm. And it'll help you to remind you, because the last thing you want to do is forget. And then you're like, oh, I just can't eat anymore. Unless you have serious distress, once you get to 50, 40, 50, it's going to be harder to eat. So that's where you're going to have to really push to train your gut.
Gotcha. Training your gut. That's almost a separate episode.
Oh, it could be a whole episode. I mean, how did you do your first 40 miler? I can't imagine. I mean, after 30,
I over-prepared.
Okay.
I wore a vest, obviously, to pack some stuff away. At one point, I lost like some of my caffeine chews and then some of my peanut butter pretzel things. They fell out of the pocket because I was trying to get them as I was running. And then they're on the ground and I'm like, oh, shit. I had a banana. The bananas were easy for me. The aid stations are totally different. But what people don't know, if you've never done an ultra, the aid stations are like barbecue spreads. I mean, there's just all kinds of food, unlike a road marathon where it's just gels or blocks and Gatorade and stuff. So that was really cool. I did okay. My biggest thing personally, and let's see if I talk about it. No, we don't have it listed. Okay. My biggest thing is electrolytes, salt.
Yes.
I'm an incredibly, incredibly heavy sweater. At mile two, it's like turning on a faucet. I lose 6 pounds in water every 10 mile run or something like that. Yeah.
That's
put it all back on.
Crazy.
It's nuts. So on anything other than a full marathon, I don't have any problems with electrolytes. I have electrolytes in a hand Gatorade bottle that I take with me, but I don't cramp up. I don't have issues like that. But on a full marathon, if I don't take separate electrolyte or salt tablets, I'll end up cramping up at like mile 20. My calf will just lock up on me. So I learned the hard way that it's electrolytes and salt for me, and liquids. I'm constantly drinking. So on the ultra run, I had a bladder pack in the back and two separate pouch ones in my chest pocket, and they were gone. All of it was gone every time by the time I got to an aid station. I refilled up everything each time.
Yeah.
First 20 miles was no big deal. It was the second 20 that just kicked my ass.
Now, had you done in your practice any type of sweat test to determine just manually, you know, I know this is terrible.
I know this is terrible. No, but other than wringing out my shirt at the end
you
of the...
You knew.
I know what it is. Yeah, it's when people see me in the gym, this is just too much information. But if I can't run outside, I run on the treadmill. On the treadmill, I run on, again, it happens starting at like mile two, mile three. I will put towels down on the rails, on the floor of the rails, and I'll put a towel across the top. I'm a puddle. If I run anything longer, if I have to do a long run, like a 10-mile run or something on a treadmill, I should probably just hose the thing off. They should give me the treadmill to take it home, because it's basically it's disgusting. It's terrible. And the cleaning girls that come in, they all know that I wipe it. They're like, they go to clean it. I'm like, no, I'll clean up my own mess. It's just, it's bad.
You can't hide at your gym.
Nope. No, they all know me. They laugh at me. Everyone goes, oh my God, my wife is like, you're disgusting. This is just terrible. I can't do anything about it. I mean, I drink tons of, you know, fluids, and I take the salt tabs, but it's the salt, the lacking of the salt that actually has affected me. Just sweating it out, it's not a big deal on a normal run for me. But what I found is I personally learned the hard way that I need the salt tablets. And on my ultra, they actually at the aid station had salt capsules.
Oh yeah.
And I said, he's like, do you want some salt? They saw me. I was soaked. My shirt was salt crystals, you know, all on it when it dried.
Oh yeah, and that's one of the first signs.
Yeah,
see it changed on your shirt or on your face. Yeah.
Oh, like snow. I was told. Yep.
Yeah.
And they said, "You want some salt tabs?" I'm like, "I don't know. I've never taken them before. I'm a heavy sweater. How many should I take?" They're like, "Take three." You're okay. Take three. And I'm like, "Okay, yeah.
Nothing's gonna happen to you."
Yeah, exactly. So that's my experience with those kinds of things. But the ultra is a different beast altogether. My training up to the ultra, though, I kind of did it random. I think I told you about this before when we initially talked. I did a full marathon, my second one ever, in November. I think it was November 1st, the Bass Pro. And I knew that there was a ultra run coming up, and I tried to sign up for it, and I missed it because I didn't realize they sell out so quick. And then I looked online, and there's one that I found in Bentonville, Bella Vista area, and it's a 40 miler. And it was 6 days later. So it was, you know, we ran on Sunday, and then the next Saturday was that 40. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to do one, you know, just to do it, what better time? I've already trained up for the 26.2 miles distance. So I don't want to have to train up to it again to do a 40 miler. So I figured if I recover enough, I'll just, you know,
it's 14 more miles.
Yeah. It was just like 2 days of rest after the half marathon or after the full marathon. And then I ran lightly the next couple of days and then did the 40.
Yeah.
I didn't break any land speed records and I didn't come in last, but you know, like I said, I did good on the first loop. The second loop just kicked my butt though.
Yeah. Well, you made me think about my second Javelina 100, talking about the lesson learned the hard way around nutrition, hydration. But for me, it was exactly that. It was hydration is just as important as the nutrition and the fuel. And I pretty much had the nutrition piece, Mike, dialed in, but I fell short on sodium. And there's two things with hydration. It's how much liquid are we losing an hour and how much sodium, which is, I mean, people lose anywhere from 200 to 2000 milligrams of sodium an hour. And when I was originally kind of directed and coached, it's like, well, Laura, it's about 400, 500 in general.
How do you get that information? How would someone get the information to get tested for something
you
like
can't,
that?
Oh, well, yeah. So there's a couple ways you can get the information now. You know, fast forward ahead. I mean, that's the science and what I learned in the certification we talked about earlier when you're guiding an athlete. But everybody's different, to your point. So I'm a ambassador of Precision Fuel and Hydration, and they have labs around the country where you can actually go and pay. I think it's like $200, and you can get an accurate read. And they're scattered all, you know, kind of all over. I recently actually got this device. It's called an H-drop. Because of my learning the hard way and my failure at some races, specifically hydration, because I wanted to know. I mean, I was training at 16 to 20 ounces an hour. I knew in Javelina, the heat was over 100 degrees on the hottest moments, and I would have to get up to a liter an hour. But ultimately, it was more. And when I got this device that I just kind of this little toy, like, I know exactly now that it's over a liter per hour of water that I lose. And you have to train kind of different temperatures because it depends on temperature, it depends on genetics, it depends on how fast you're going, right, your energy. But you can do different tests as you go. But in general, and then from an electrolyte perspective, to your point, the most important thing is the sodium. I'm losing over 1,000 milligrams of sodium per hour, and I was training at 400.
Wow.
So that alone was like, wow. It was a big deficit. Not to mention when you're running 100 miles, your thoughts and you're not thinking as clearly, and you just want to get in and out because you want to keep going. So I made a grueling mistake of not allowing the aid station to help me fill my bladder in the back to where it needed to be. I'm like, oh, I'll make it to the next one, or I wouldn't top off as I needed to. So I really have had to hone in more on the hydration because that can make or break a race, I believe, even more so than the nutrition. And it is so important, to your point.
Yeah, it does. That's what I'm going to have to do then. I'm going to have to find one of those places and get my, I've always wanted to see what my VO2 max is, if it matches up to my watch, but I want to get that checked. And the salt, the sodium loss and the salt, the sweat loss, I need to get that looked at, because if I keep doing this, I want more accurate numbers.
I agree. And the Precision Hydration and Fuel, this is for listeners, and they're operating model is, you can go in for nothing. This is what drew me to them. First of all, I tried their fuel and it was like rocket fuel. But secondly, when you go in, you can automatically, say you have a race coming up, like I have Squatch Apple 50 miler coming up in March. I could sign up for a free evaluation to help me with a nutrition and fueling hydration plan for that race. They'll ask you some questions and you meet with not a nutrition coach like me, like Cassie, a sure dietitian.
Oh, wow.
And you give them all the information and they'll send you a plan of what they believe based on what you told them, your sweat rate, all that kind of stuff, and what you should be fueling with pre-race, during race, and post-race. It's fabulous. Wow. It's a great model.
Hey, everybody. It's your host, Mike Fleming. I've recently added another staple to my running kit, these UCAN energy gels. I started using them during the Austin Marathon, and I fell in love. So now they're always one of three things I take on my runs, and you should add them to your running kit as well. With UCAN gels, you get advanced glucose control, which is the foundation of energy and performance. You'll have no energy crashes because there's no sugar, which means there's no spikes, which means a steady fuel supply. You'll also have more fat utilization, which enhances your body's ability to burn fat or fuel. And you won't have gut issues because of their unique digestive advantage, even at high carb doses. UCAN has patented a supercarb technology called Live Steady. It's an extended-release supercarb backed by over a dozen clinical trials, has a unique ability to deliver high amounts of energy while keeping glucose levels steady, helping prevent crashes. One of the coolest things about UCAN was that it was created to save a life. Jonah, a boy with glycogen storage disease, needed to prevent life-threatening blood sugar drops. His parents and scientists developed Live Steady, which fuels athletes with steady energy through the power of glucose control. And for a limited time, if you use a code RUNNINGFORBEGINNERS when checking out at UCAN.co, you'll get 20% off your purchase. Just use the code RUNNINGFORBEGINNERS. I'm going to have to do that for sure.
Yeah, please do it. Let me know.
All right. So you touched on this a second ago about losing the salt and the liquids in your mind going to other places. So
yeah,
when you completed this 12-hour endurance events and multiple 100-milers, like when things inevitably go wrong in an ultra, what mental strategies do you use, or what mental strategies help you problem solve instead of panic? Because a lot of these races, I'm sure you're on your own, you're alone, even physically, like where you don't see someone for next to you. On my 40 miler, there was people on the first loop everywhere. It was just like a regular race. But when I did my second loop, I was alone the whole time. I ran into one other person on that second loop. You know, that was it. So my mind starts to wander and going, what the heck am I doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So for me, I have literally on my phone, on my notes, I have a mental toolkit that I have built over the years. And it is a laundry list of things, from imagery to visualization to one step at a time to breathing, you know, kind of doing a body scan. I've listened to so many podcasts and so many elites out there of, you know, here are the things to get you through the tough times. And there's one book that I read by Jason Koop. It's Training Essentials for Ultra. I mean, he talked about this acronym. It was ADAPT. And it's when things go hard, you have to accept. And then you have to diagnose and you have to analyze what's the problem, you know, kind of take action. So I'll kind of take an example of that in a second. But it really helps you to really think of what you can control, Mike, versus what you can't control. Mm-hmm. So the first, I have four main things that have worked for me that may resonate with newer ultra runners or maybe yourself. And I'd love to hear anything that you've done as well. And Sally McRae always says this, and she's the Run Strong podcast for ultra marathoners. And it's always stuck with me. It's when you get to the start line, expect it to be hard. Like, it's going to be uncomfortable. Anybody who signs up for an ultra, if they think it's going to be easy, it's not going to be easy. So you've got to change your mindset that at some point, something's going to blow up. As much as you prepare for whatever that is, that blister on your toe or what have you, you've got to say, I'm ready to embrace that suck. And I'm going to figure out what I need to do. So it's that shift. In fact, when you're at the start line, folks are like, oh, is this your fall ultra, first ultra, what have you? Whenever anyone asks me, is this your fall first ultra? I always say, no, but I treat it like it's my first ultra. because you never know what's going to happen. So that's number one. Number two is you're always going to get your brain telling you negative things, right? Our brain can hurt us or help us. And it's the most powerful weapon that we have. So I reframe those negative thoughts that inevitably are going to come in your mind. So when you're climbing up that big mountain and your legs are piercing like thorns and you're in such pain, and your brain says to you, you can stop, you know, you don't have to do this. You could go home. Why are you doing, like, back to the, you know, why are you doing this? Back to Jason's acronym. I accept the negative thought and I reframe it and I say, you're right. I could turn around, but I'm not, because guess what? I've trained for 5 months. My family came across the country to be with me, to support me, and is at the end waiting for me. I trained for this. I'm going to do this. Or whatever that is, that's, you know, that power is going to turn on and that switch is going to turn on. Darn it, I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep going and I'm going to fight. So reframing any negative thoughts is number two. And then staying present is number three. So commonly I'll hear folks say, well, just get to the next aid station, you know, smaller chunks. For me, getting to the next aid station could mean like 6 hours.
Yeah.
I recently volunteered at the UTMB and I heard other volunteers who weren't runners say, oh, you only have, you know, 10 miles or whatever it is. And for me, like, I don't want to hear that. So right. I would reframe and I would say, you're doing great. One step at a time, 1 mile at a time. You're going to get to the next aid station. Do you have everything that you need? So it's really staying present versus no one wants to hear, I got 50 miles left, you know, halfway there, halfway to go. So that's number three. And then one thing that I have found to be helpful for me is dedicating races to people that I love or people that I'm grateful to. So whether it's I dedicate miles or I dedicate loops. For example, at my first 100, which was like monumental for me, I had a big crew. My daughter was there. My brother was there. I had friends, you know, friends there to support me. Javelina 100 is, if anyone ever gets to the mark where they want to do their first 100, I highly recommend it, because you're just doing five, I just say just, but you're doing five loops around and your crew's in the same place. But back to dedication, the reason why I'm running today is because of my high school cross country coach. And he came up to me one day in the hallway. I was a basketball player. And he's like, hey, we have openings on our cross country team. You want to run? I'm like, I don't want to run. He's like, well, you know, you can get in shape for basketball. I'm like, well, I guess, you know, I said, how much do I have to run? 3 miles. So yeah, whatever. So I ended up running, but he's the reason why that I'm on this journey and that I ended up, you know, continuing on throughout my career and just have this passion for running. So how many years later that is, I'm doing my first 100. He was supposed to come out and meet me. He couldn't. He got diagnosed with cancer, unfortunately. Yeah. He couldn't be there. But he was on camera now I'm probably going to get emotional. As I'm coming through the loop, and I said, hey, Byron, this loop is for you. And he looked over at his wife and he said, did you hear her? This loop is for me. Yeah. And again, it was because that was why I got into running. So I dedicated it to him. So I do that for, again, it just helps me. So that whole loop or that mile that I dedicate the person to help me think about the pain that I'm in and become distracted is to, every thought that I try and have is the memory with them or the thoughts or what would Byron do or what would this person do? So being grateful for people, because running is hard and there are people like Byron who have it a lot harder than me being out there in that desert running a darn 100 miles that are suffering. And that's kind of why sometimes folks do hard things or ultras, because if you can do that, you can endure anything in life. So.
Yeah.
That is what gets me through dedicating those miles and loops to people that I'm grateful to in my life.
Nice. Very nice. So from a coaching standpoint,
yep.
How do you know when an athlete's actually ready to attempt their first ultra? And what distance do you recommend to your clients? Or maybe, I mean, I assume, well, I don't know. I don't want to make an assumption, but I'm not sure how they come to you. Do you get clients that come to you and say, ooh, I want to take on ultra? teach me how to do it? Or do they already know what they want to do and then they look to you?
I mean, it's both. I mean, it's like having kids, Mike. It's like, do you ever know when you're ready? And there's never a good time, right? And some folks won't come because they don't think they have time or they can't build it into their life. And back to what I said earlier, we can find a way so that we don't blow up your schedule to figure out if it's a priority for you to build it in.
So how do you, so what do you tell them what distance they should start with and how do you get them on that like directional?
My advice might not be different, might be different from other coaches. I believe you start small. So if you're a marathon runner, my belief is you, I mean, you went right to the 40, which is fine. But if you can get a 50K under your belt, see how it feels, and then go to the next one, that's probably traditional. That doesn't mean you can't go from, I'm training someone right now who went from a 26 miler to a 50 miler. It's doable. You've got to make sure, and the athlete has to make sure that they're committed. They understand the expectations, the duration of training, and really what it's going to take to get there. And that's my job, you know, to help them. Folks come for accountability. They come for a program that works for them and for their goals, back to what we were talking about earlier. So it's consistency, what I look for in someone. Are you able to consistently commit week over week over week to the training? And if you are, there's no doubt that you can achieve that goal, whatever it is.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just a matter of signing up for the race.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing. I like to do that. Once you sign up, you're kind of locked in my mind.
You're committed. It's like, I wasn't sure for a long time. Like, should I do a 50? Should I do a 50? And then my coach said, well, because I had a coach from the very start. And he was like, well, once you just kind of hit click on ultra sign up, aren't you in, Laura? I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. So let's do this. And I just
It's a way to do it. Yeah. And it's not like it's not like you can't afford to lose the $50 or $100 it might cost you to sign up.
Right.
But no one wants to. It's a weird mind game. It's a weird mind trick, but it works. So what do you think is the common mistakes that you see new ultra runners make in their everything, in their training, in their nutrition, in their pacing, in their race selection? What's the biggest or one or multiple mistakes that new ultra people make?
Gosh, we could do a whole podcast on this. Training, doing too much too soon. That's why I got a coach, because I felt that I didn't know how to slow down and I didn't even know what recovery meant. And I didn't know that recovery is where the magic happens. And to this day, I do too much. So I still
coach
myself, right? To figure like that rest day has to be a rest day and really helping the athlete understand that. The other thing is studying the course. And this, maybe you haven't heard this one before, but understanding, and you talked about race selection, right, too? Like, if I'm going to do a race, I want to know what the race looks like. I want to know the elevation. I want to know where it is. I want to know, because if there's a big difference between the JFK 50 miler and maybe 4,000 feet of elevation and going out to Oregon or somewhere else and doing 10 or 15 feet of elevation, your training has to look so much different. So that's one reason why you want to look at the course before you look at a race. Before the prep, but also understanding the course from a perspective of aid stations. How many miles are between the aid stations? What's at the aid stations? If you want a pacer, when can the pacer join you? What I do is I go, and I'm starting to do it right now for Sedona 125. I'm going to YouTube. I'm trying to find people who tape the race, and you can see that all the time, and you see their journey, and you can see kind of the dynamics of the course and what it looks like, so you can visually, even mentally prepare for it. So that's another thing that I would guide runners on. And the comparison game is something that newer runners, I believe, struggle with, and that's comparing yourself to other people. It's more about it's not what the other person's doing or what the other person's training plan is about. Back to what I said earlier, just because this person's training for the same race that you are, their training plan might be very different, Mike, because of who they are and the kind of athlete they are. And another thing about the kind of comparison, which I learned the hard way, is, and this is probably in marathons too, everyone starts out so fast, right? Like, you get all revved up, you're all excited, you're at the start line. And at an ultra, I see it. People are going fast. I'm like, wait a second. I thought I was going to do, in my mind, 13 to 14 minute miles to run this 100 mile race. In fact, when I started the Oregon Cascades last year, everyone's starting out and I'm looking at my watch and I'm looking at this woman next to me. And we're like, wait a second. Everybody literally was doing 12 minutes per mile. I'm like, it's not, I'm sitting back. I don't know about you. We ended up being the two last people in the back of the pack. I said, you wait. By the time we get halfway through, I guarantee you we're going to pass at least 10 people. So that was kind of the game that I did anyway. It helped me with distraction to the 50 miler. Guess how many people I passed?
How many?
20 dropped by 50.
See?
Because they started at too fast. So when you're starting a race, you have to say, am I going too fast? And if your brain says yes, you slow down. Because it wasn't my 12-minute miles was not my race. It was 13 and a half. And that's what I was starting with. That was in my game plan. And too many people let everybody else pace them. And it happens, and I believe in all races. I'm guilty of it in 10Ks.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I can see that happening. Well, that's really good advice. All right. So pretty much the last question, your brand, you know, Own Your Endurance. What does a phrase truly mean to you? And like, what's one actionable step that listeners can take right now to owning their own endurance? You know, whether they're training for a marathon or an ultra or whatever race, you know?
This is kind of a funny story. When I started this journey and I was picking a name for my business, I had 20 names on a, kind of like you, when you started your journey, like, what's my theme going to be? What's my mantra? Right. What's my niche going to be? And I had every name but Own Your Endurance on my list. I had Endure with Laura. I had Run for Longevity. I had Run Long. It was all about, for me, running for life. I know personally that I want to run for as long as I possibly can. Kind of like Bob Decker. I don't know if you know him, but he's the 83-year-old. Finished the Badwater 135. It's probably the hardest ultra marathon in the country. Wow. 83. He came back for a vengeance because he didn't get it 2 years later. And he finished it. And he finished it with 2 hours at 83. Wow. I want to be Bob Decker. But back to the question. So as I was going, conversing with my friends on, here are all the names. What do you think? I had one mentor say, what do you really want to achieve? Like, how do you want to coach? What's your philosophy? And I'm like, well, I want runners that come to me who are committed. I want runners who come to me who love running but enjoy the process. I want folks to own it. And they're like, okay. And then I'm like, I got it. It's own your endurance. So like anything, I can't run for you, Mike. Mm-hmm. I can't do the work, but I can help you on the journey. I can help you meet you where you are. I can help you with the training program, helping you achieve optimal fitness so that you get to the race healthy. And then my niche was kind of that aging runner, 45 plus, back to the experience. Right. I talked to so many coaches as I was kind of starting this up and mentors, and they're like, you know, there's so many people who started ultra running later in life, like you. We both started at 52. Yeah. I mean, I'm older than you, but we both started that kind of ultra journey or that running journey for you. And people want, in many cases, to work with people who have endured the experience and have gone through what they have gone through. So again,
a lot of people think that we all started running when we were 12 and 13. And I know some people have, but that wasn't me. So they see me now and they think, oh, you've been running forever. And I'm like, no, not really.
What you've done is incredible. I mean, the fact that you started up and then what you're doing and now you're helping folks. And I hear you on your podcast, like anybody who wants help with 5Ks and 10Ks, you know, just getting started, back to what tips can I, you know, provide to the audience? It's what is that one thing that you can do for yourself right now to achieve that goal? It could be a race. It could be taking that first step, out the door. But it's what is showing up for you look like this week? And what can you dedicate in terms of time? Is it 20 minutes for 2 days? Is it 3 days for this? And start there. Put it on the calendar. We all know that when we schedule it, it's more apt to happen. And then take that first step. So again, it's all about embracing your own journey. If you want to achieve something, it's possible. And that's why I do it. I believe anything is possible at any age, and we can all take that first step. And if we don't try, then we'll never know.
Very nice. So I know everyone's heard it from the beginning of the intro before you came on, and you've said it a couple of times. So to contact you, they can find you at ownyourendurance.com, and that's your business, and they can try to connect with you that way. I will have all your socials and everything else listed on the show notes and in the blog posts and stuff, so they'll be able to find you there. But
sure.
Just for now, you did pass on some really exciting news that you got selected. Now you're a coach for a different organization. So I don't recall the name of it, even though you told me. So why don't you take a few seconds and explain a little bit about that?
Yes.
It's pretty exciting.
Yes. So hot off the press. So I am coached by an athlete named Joe Corcione, and he has a team of 14, now 15. I think I'm number 15 coaches.
Nice.
For the everyday, woohoo, the everyday ultra. And okay. I could not be more excited. There is no one more passionate about helping the everyday runner achieve their optimum performance. And what's really exciting is there are runners from just doing marathon, you know, I say just, but starting out in marathons, right. Back mm-hmm. to your point, just because it's called everyday ultra, usually that pivot point is from marathon to 50K on up.
Right.
And one of the coaches on his team is Killian Korth. And I don't know if you know that name, but he just won, or I shouldn't say just, but in 2025, the Triple Crown of Ultras. And that is three in number one position and three consecutive 200-mile races in 1 year. Mm. And he wow. is one of those coaches as well. So I'm among many elite runners. And I have the privilege to have been coached under him, trained under him, and now I'm on his team. And when you go to my website, it'll take you to an appointment under the Everyday Ultra company, an umbrella. But I also coach, I'm a nutrition coach as well, because I have many of my former colleagues in my professional world and friends that say, hey, I don't run those crazy miles like you do, but I'm very interested in habit change and helping to build a more optimal life every day. So I coach nutrition and wellness as well.
That's awesome. And anyone can find you on ownyourendurance.com for
that's
those
right.
for those things. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, that's terrific.
I am so excited. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, no, thank you very much. I would chat, and now we're over an hour already. So
I know. This is great. Thank you.
I am proud to announce that I've become an ambassador for stillirun.org. Still I Run is a global nonprofit organization that promotes running for mental well-being so that people can live a healthier lives. Running for your mental health isn't about pace or performance. It's about feeling a little more grounded than you did yesterday. Their Mental Health Runner program from Still I Run is a free, self-guided 12-week program designed to help people use running as a tool for mental well-being. This program provides free running shoes, a Still I Run tech tee, and a guided workbook with training plans, reflections, and education that meets you where you are. If you're ready to take that first step, apply today at stillirun.org/MHRP. Applications are reviewed monthly. I want to thank Laura. This has been an incredible conversation. Thank you for sharing your experience, your coaching insights, and the lessons you've learned across so many endurance events. If you're listening and want to learn more about Laura's coaching, philosophy, or endurance resources, you can find her at ownyourendurance.com. We'll also link that in the show notes. If this episode helped you think differently about training, fueling, or long-term progression, please consider sharing it with a running friend or leave a review. Comments are the best ways to support the show. As always, remember, progress happens when you stay consistent, patient, and curious. So until next time, let's run forward together. I hope you hit the like button, follow the podcast, and share with your social media contacts. You never know who in your circle has wanted to run, but for whatever reason was too shy or fearful to undertake the challenge. I hope to point out the inclusiveness of running and give information that is accessible and relatable from a relatively new runner's perspective. Don't forget, you're responsible for your own health. Please talk to your doctor if necessary before starting any new physical activity. And nothing said on this podcast by myself or the guests should be construed as medical advice. Any products advertised on the show and purchased using the code RUNWITHMIKE will earn me a commission. This podcast was created
written, produced, edited by myself, Mike Fleming. Show music is Every Day to Play by Ethos.